Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, good afternoon, and good night. It's the podcast with a K. I am Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean.
Hello.
And Gareth Cavana.
Woo!
Okay. And we are here.
A full Amy Panto there. So
it was a bit, wasn't it? You can't miss a bit of Panto.
Oh, my dear. That was more like Russell T. Davis.
Panto gets fairly maligned, doesn't it?
It does.
It's an important part of British culture, and it's an important part of people's experience of the theatre.
Well, yeah, and it also keeps lots of thefts fed for the winter.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a good thing. Yeah, well, I sort of like Panto, and I don't like Panto. I do feel that JNT... I watched Rent-A-Santa at the weekend, which is the Christmas edition of Rent-A-Ghost from 1977.
Mm.
And that is the programme that JNT was born to produce. It's got everything in it. Big ins, big musical numbers, dancing, Santa, a couple of puns. And actually, the second half of it is a Panto version of Aladdin, where most of them are wearing costumes from Robots of Death, which is clearly not long finished, wrapped.
What year did that broadcast?
77.
Was it as early as that?
Yeah. And then at the end, when you think you've seen it all, Toberman turns up as the genie.
Really?
Yeah. £50 for the first person to rub that lamp, etc., etc.
Is that the last one with the old ghost?
The one that looks like John Pertwee, but isn't
yes.
John Pertwee.
Yeah.
I don't know, actually. It's also got the very boring man. It had Mr. Claypole, and it's the Dobbin... it seems to be the Dobbin origin story as well.
I can't believe you just said that.
hey, listen, over at Rent-A-Ghost Base, you know, the rows that go on about that and the canonicity. And in fact, someone popped up on my Facebook when I did that. I did two posts. I did a jokey one which said, I noticed the Meekers are living next door to Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun, because there was a bloke with a very austere moustache in a Mac. And they said, and someone comes back and said, no, that's not his next door neighbour. That's his mother and father. I thought, okay, detail, important. And then I said something about, oh, this is the Dobbin origin story. Then someone popped up with, oh, yeah, they were the blokes that were in the Merker. And then the same guy pops up and says, no, I think you'll find it was a different pair of blokes in the Merker. This was the original set of Dobbins. So it made me think that there's a real Rent-A-Ghost scene there where they row over canonicity. And they obviously have their own Graham Williams versus JNT versus Hinchcliffe. There's probably some very serious gothic episodes of Rent-A-Ghost.
Maybe there's a Rent-A-Pod with a P.
Possibly, where they row about it endlessly. John Percy bloke, who looks a bit like Barry from Barry Stewart Hargreaves from Heidi High.
Yeah, the reason I asked is because I have a vague memory of seeing an episode of Rent-A-Ghost with that guy in, and I wondered whether this might be it. Might be the one.
I think they binned him off.
So I don't have a great deal of knowledge about Rent-A-Ghost, but I do remember that there being an old guy and being a bit younger than yourself, Mr. Cavana.
I think if
it was as early as 1977, that would put me at 2 years old, unless they repeated it, I suppose.
See, I don't remember watching this one. I do remember watching Rent-A-Ghost. I mean, it's a treat. You know, there's a mashup video waiting to be done with the War Chief and Rent-A-Ghost, for sure. And Mrs. Meeker is played by Anne Emery, who's Dick Emery's sister.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so it's nice to see the Emerys were still making a crust.
Fan of Rent-A-Ghost, James?
Not anymore. Certainly not after this conversation.
All right, let's push on.
What's put you off? Come on, it's a terrible show. But I tell you what, they have more budget than Doctor Who. Looking at it, I saw at least 6 scene changes, and big musical numbers.
I don't remember the musical numbers.
No, this was a one-off.
I was just in the one-off one.
Yeah, it was a one-off. You could see old Mr. Claypole was really enjoying them, to be fair.
Okay, we're going to leave Musical Numbers and Rent-A-Ghost there. We have some Doctor Who news. Doctor Who Series 12 announcement was released by the BBC on Sunday morning. The Doctor and her friends will land again on BBC One in 2020. Now, a few weeks ago, we were given the impression that it was going to be 2019 when Doctor Who returned. But it turns out we have, other than January 1, 2019, we have at least 12 months free of Doctor Who. So that's
interesting. Not like it's never happened before.
Well, it isn't at all, is it? No. And some people are a bit shocked by this. Some people are mouthing off violently and viciously on chat, forum, and the like with their dissatisfaction over the series and the fact that it's not coming back for a year. Oh, well, you know.
It's a nice mix, isn't it?
What's that?
Scott, I'm so annoyed that this series is not coming back. Really hated it.
Yes.
Oh, now listen, don't underestimate, you know, the thrill people have in hating something. I always think this is like with missing episodes where something comes back and there's this little spike of pleasure and then it's like something else ignored on our shelf.
Yeah.
You know, does anyone ever talk about Galaxy 4 anymore?
Last time I talked about Galaxy 4 was 4 cups of hot chocolate.
Well, there you have it. You see? It exists. We're kind of all right with it existing, but we don't care either.
Now,
they'd have been marching on the BBC.
Yeah, I think there is this feel that a criminal act was committed in the destruction of the old Doctor Who episodes, not just Doctor Who, but because obviously it happened with other shows, but Doctor Who being a thing still that people are interested in, people do feel quite aggrieved by that happening. So I can understand people being upset about the loss of something and being extremely happy about it being restored, and they're not being particularly bothered about watching it just because they have the choice to watch it, should they choose to watch it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Do or not.
Although, of course, there's a delicious irony that a lot of the ones we can still enjoy or ignore are only in existence because of criminal acts, you know, people fuzzing things out of windows and out of
space,
you know, take them home in Asda carrier bags. So, yeah, there's a delicious irony. But, yeah, I think it was always planned for a gap year. It's got to be.
Yeah, the Chipster says, we're off again. Well, we never actually stopped, as Jodie Whittaker's Doctor and friends have been winning the hearts of families across the nation this autumn. We've been busy with a whole new set of action-packed adventures for the 13th Doctor. We adore making this show and have been blown away by the response from audiences, so we can't wait to bring more scares, more monsters, and more Bradley Walsh, Mandip Gill, and Toes and Cole to BBC One. Brilliant! I don't think he wrote that.
There was, and I'm just trying to locate it. It was an article, wasn't it, largely on Doctor Who News, which I think sort of pushed this. It was the same article. I'm trying to find it. I strangely can't find it at the moment.
Well, maybe they pulled it.
I'm wondering whether they pulled it, because it was the one that also suggested that Jodie would go with Chris Chibnall. I could have sworn it was the same article, which I kind of wish I'd found before I'd said that, because if I'm wrong, then I just, you know.
That was on Starburst, wasn't it?
It was several areas, wasn't it? It was the same sort of time. Did Starburst do it first?
Or Outpost Scarrow, one of those places.
Oh, it's so annoying when you can't find what you're looking for.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bono's had that problem for years, hasn't he?
Oh, very good. Thank you.
I'm here all week.
This morning. Yeah.
So, well, you know.
Are we bothered? Are we bothered?
No.
I'm not bothered. I think it gives it another year to marinate. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
It's not a huge disappointment. There's, you know, there's plenty more Doctor Who to watch.
Oh, yeah. And you know, we've got animated Macro Terror coming and a couple of other treats, I guess.
Well, do you know what? There is something else as well. In many ways, it's a wise decision, because 2019 is the final series of Game of Thrones. And I also think it's the first series of one of the prequel shows or spin-off shows. So a lot of the kind of, for want of a better phrase, cult TV press is going to be focusing on Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is going to be like everywhere in the summer.
Oh, it's just going to eat everything. It's going to be like an enormous cultural black hole that everything tumbles into.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's not an unwise decision. I think it, you know, I mean, we've talked about this previously, and And I don't think it's a great idea to have the gap. I think that, you know, there are scheduling reasons, there are habitual reasons not to have a gap, despite the fact that, you know, everyone's watching iPlayer and Netflix and stuff, you know, if, getting overnights of like 6 million or whatever,
there'll be a
people still watching
decision.
Telly.
There'll be a budgetary decision. I mean, this has been a very lavish looking series. I can't think of a single cheapo episode. Can you?
Maybe one, yeah. But,
maybe
Kablam
is about the cheapest that I can think of.
Well, there's also the Space Gremlin one, which only has like three people in it. But
I haven't seen that, so I can't comment on the
But listen, have you found what you're looking for yet, Bonner?
Yeah, I did. It's his Outpost Gyro, so apologies to Doctor Who News.net. It's Outpost Gyro and Starburst, where they quite clearly say Doctor Who will not only air Series 12 in 2019, but also restore the Christmas Day special. And that's also the article which sort of says everyone will be going as well, which...
Yeah. That's I mean,
a thoroughly accurate report.
It's at least half wrong.
Yeah, Starburst, just having a look, which if either came first, no, they both sort of seem to lay claim to the news. There's neither sort of reference the other. So yeah. I don't know who came with it first. November the 17th for Outpost Gyro and 17th for Starburst as well.
Well, I mean, I think, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You know, these things are often right at the time when they are...
Yeah, absolutely.
Down, yeah. So. I could imagine it was always planned for a gap. Then I could imagine it doing incredibly well. Then I could imagine conversations going, look, is there any way we can get this on the air next year?
Is
there any way we can circumvent the plans? And is there a way to compact that? Discussions were maybe had, and then it was actually, no, sorry, guys, it's been planned this way.
I think that's the route. I'm sure I heard someone say somewhere that there had been an uncertainty about where this season would go.
And there's still scope there for a 2020 Christmas special, 2019, beg your pardon, Christmas special. There's no denial that there's going to be a Christmas special next year. So.
Well, or a New Year's special.
Well, it won't be next year, will it?
No.
Maybe the year after.
But they've still had Doctor Who in 2019. That's a bit of a cheat, but, you know, we're used to that by now. We should have got over all the sort of pearl-clutching shock of this by now.
But I think also...
It's never happened.
And I think what they're trying to say, I can't remember whether it's Charlotte Moore says it or whether it's Chibnall. I think it's Charlotte Moore that, you know, that this is an incredibly complex production. And you think most BBC shows now, they don't, of this sort of drama level, don't tend to run annually. If you think of things like Line of Duty, you'll get that every 2 years if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Not ones which run as full series don't tend to run at this sort of pace. So it shouldn't be too disappointing. At the same time, I can get why people who like it annually, because we've had it annually and we used to have it annually before, you know, back in the day, kind of feel frustrated. But there is
I think one of the major reasons for the Davies era's success was that you knew when it was going to be on, whether it was the time of year when I wanted it to be on or not. That's immaterial. You knew when it was going to be on.
Russell was a writing machine, though, wasn't he?
He's
the only one who's been able to do it, and even he only managed the 4 years of it. And let's be honest, you know, I think if you said, right, we want Doctor Who every year, probably the only way to do it would be as a 6-part series, and probably as 2 3-parters.
Or get more writers.
Well, no, because I think from a sort of resource planning point of view, that's the only way you could do it. You know, let's be honest. Everyone forgets that when Russell brought back Doctor Who originally, it was going to be a 6-part series. They expanded it and they found the extra resources to make it a 14-part series. But it was originally supposed to be 6. And it's one of the great parlor games is, can you tell Russell's first season in 6 parts? And I think you possibly can. Although it's interesting what you have to lose out. I think episodes 1, 2, 3 are probably intact. It's where you go with 4, 5, 6 that gets interesting. I'm not sure you can have Dalek. You certainly can't have the Empty Child. I think you more or less have to go for 4, 5, 6. You probably have to go the long game and then the final 2-parter. I think that's the only way it works.
Mm-hmm.
but then you miss out on all those other things. But I think if it was six parts, if it was a six-part series, I think you could have one every year. But then you still get less Doctor Who.
Hmm. I mean, there could be an argument that it... I mean, again, without knowing at all, that first series could have been almost quite literally the first six episodes, more or less, because Dalek would actually probably make a finale. If you were going to do a six-parter with the hope of trying to bring it back the next year, you might end the season on the big enemy. Because Parting of the Ways had a lot of changes, didn't it? I mean, he always said that a lot of the stuff he wrote on the fly as they were sort of getting ready to go, the Bad Wolf elements were written in late. So yeah. It could be that, I don't know. To me, in a sense, if I was thinking of a short series, maybe Dalek would be the big end one if you were going to have one. But then you could also argue that it being an adaptation, largely an adaptation of Sherman's, would that suggest that that was a late arrival?
I'm not sure that you would that you'd end on Dalek. I don't know. I think 1, 2, 3, you can't really change them because that's the Doctor and Rose bonding. And I think you need the past, you need the future, you need the now. I think after that, it gets more interesting. You might be able to do Dalek and then go into the long game and the last part, the Parting of the Ways. But then you don't get Captain Jack. So it's a different show then as well. You could probably get rid of Bad Wolf because as much as I love all the Big Brother and game show stuff, you could do without it. But it's difficult to see a lot of the things we love being retained in that six part structure, and yet that was the original plan and the original pitch. So Doctor Who has broken the rules by bloating into this enormous 14-part thing that now can't be delivered year on year.
Indeed. There's also the opportunity that there could have been anything in that six-part pitch which could have been dropped and then sort of resurfaced for series two. So you've got 20 odd episodes that you could be considering as potentials for those six.
Well, maybe, but I think those first three episodes have an arc in themselves.
I think the first three, I wouldn't disagree. Yeah. I kind of thinking if I was pulling together a six episode series on the idea of that still pushing forward to maybe getting a second, how would I flow the tone of that series? And I just don't feel if you were to have a Daleks, if that was going to be in there, to me, something, and again, it depends on budgets as well. Obviously, Dalek or a very different Parting of the Ways would be what I would use. Parting of the Ways just, I'd imagine, have to be in a very different beast.
I could see you going from, if you assume 1, 2, 3 is the same,
yeah.
If we then have Dalek as episode 4,
okay,
so you then get also Adam as well. So you get Dalek episode 4. So we now get the consequences of the Time War. I thought you were all dead. You then go to the long game, part 5, get rid of Adam, set up the finale with the station, and then hop forward 300 years, and you get a truncated Captain Jackless version of Parting of the Ways and probably a little bit of intro from Bad Wolf.
I would feel 1, 2, 3, I agree. I just don't... My issue with the long game is it feels like that is an episode that was almost intentionally created to borrow, again, in that very cost-effective way from the Satellite 5, was it?
That's it, yeah.
From End of the World. I don't know. I kind of feel that feels like that's an afterthought. But the problem is, unless you start pulling in the other two-parters, I can't think of anything other than Dalek that really fits, because the other two-parters, I don't know. If you're doing a six-part series, would you drop a two-parter in there? And yet at the same time, I kind of feel the reason I'm slightly against Dalek now is that it is an adaptation, which I think if you were doing a six-episode pitch, you wouldn't pitch an adaptation.
And yet it's your shocking intro for the Daleks. And if you were able to keep the finale secret, which let's face it, Russell was very good at, and then you had Daleks back in the finale, I could see that's your... It does the same job, which is like, ooh, Daleks. Ooh, lovely. Ooh, there's only one. And then we go to the end. Perhaps we should open this up to our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one.
Well, we only have one listener. Well, yes, I agree.
Yeah. What about you, boss? What about the patron? What do you think?
I've never given it an immense amount of thought. I agree that I think it's unlikely that if you are pitching 6-episode series that you would have one that is based on someone else if you were probably going to be the writer of all of them. So I think Dalek probably wouldn't have been in there. I probably think that you're probably right, probably would be 1, 2, and 3 would more or less stay, although then again, one of those is written by Mark Gatiss. It's the end of the series, which is a bit tricky. Whether would it be a two-parter? I think it probably would be a two-parter.
I'm beginning to wonder that, whether you'd go... And I think getting... Because, I mean, he still did the... even the ones that other people wrote, he still commissioned the ideas for them to write, as I recall. So you could go 1, 2, 3.
He still sketches the season out.
Yeah.
So you go 1, 2, 3. And maybe, quite honestly, I wonder whether Aliens of London would have been a one-parter. And then you might have had...
As a one-parter, yeah.
And then you might have had Bad Wolf. It wouldn't have been called Bad Wolf, but basically the Big Brother game show plays, and then Parting of the Ways, because that's got a sort of mixture of tones. It brings it back to the family, which you need. So Aliens of London, I think, would be in there. Yeah.
And also with Aliens of London being in the first recording block.
Yeah.
That would suggest that it was around earlier than some of the others, perhaps.
So maybe you're right, Gareth. Maybe the fifth one would either be Bad Wolf or The Long Game. I mean, there's no reason if you're still plotting out a six in a row that you might want to drop in, you know, an easy one. I just kind of feel that the Bad Wolf one does carry the two-parter, which I think I could imagine doing at the end of the six, and it has a bit of the sort of contemporary satire, which I think you'd like to inject.
It's populist, that's right. And if Russell's determinedly making a big populist show that he wants people to watch in bigger numbers, then yeah, I would imagine that's delicious. All of that Big Brother, Trini and Susanna. Yeah.
If you catch him again, you'll have to see if you can find out what his...
I need to ask. He'll probably say, oh, I can't.
Well, maybe we'll find out one day. But we are actually here to talk about something 13 years later.
Yes.
The Battle of...
Because we've just used half of our big review, podcast talking about Rent-A-Ghost and Russell's season one. But that's not. Yeah.
The Battle of Ranskor Ab Kolos.
Great title.
Straight from the world of Star Trek comes this title for episode 10 of Doctor Who series 11, which was written by Chris the Chibi Chib Chips the Chibnall and directed by Jamie Childs, who I think has proved through series 11 that direction is certainly his talent. And it sees the Doctor re-meeting the Toothface Simshar.
Yes.
And it's set on a planet, and I tell you what, I did mention this before we started recording, I was getting serious Time in the Rani vibes early on.
Okay.
You've got these two slightly silly in appearance aliens in terms of hair, in robes, walking through a quarry. It's not a million miles from Time of the Rani. And then there's the magic with the stones and everything. It sort of like goes in a different direction. But yeah, there was a Time of the Rani feeling to it early on. For me.
It was in a nice looking quarry.
Yeah, and there was two funny looking aliens. I don't really know where to go with this. Mark Addy was in there as Paul Trachy, who I haven't seen him do anything since Game of Thrones. So that was a nice appearance. I'm sure he's been doing lots of stuff, but I haven't seen him do anything.
And he was nice. Yeah. It was a nice little performance. It was good.
Yeah. So there's the episode, and the Doctor meets that guy with the teeth again, and I thought it was enjoyable enough. I don't have masses to say about this episode. It was had some nice ideas in it, borrowing from Pirate Planet a bit.
Oh yes, that got the old toes tingling. That was always nice, you know. But not done as well, of course. You know, it did lack a sort of nice big fruity performance to anchor it. But Do you know what? I think it was okay. I think it was the first one this season that probably solved the three companion conundrum in that everyone had something to do.
Yeah.
It gave us our cake and eat it by splitting it up in that, you know, we had, you know, it made sense to split everyone up. And I thought what was done was tight and economic and well-written and not a huge cast, but it was very good. I can't say I always followed it, but I did enjoy it.
Yeah. What about you, James?
It's kind of funny, isn't it? I mean, I remember when the first shots of this came out with her carrying the artifact, and there were people screaming, "Key to Time." And it just amazes me after 13 years or whatever it is that people still have that sort of insane excitement that the show's going to have the Key to Time, Sutek, and the Rani at some point, maybe together.
Well, they weren't completely wrong, were they? Because, you know, it was a bit like the Rani
Pirate Planet.
And the Pirate Planet, yeah.
That is true, but it wasn't the Key to Time. So,
No.
But it was just interesting. Those are the first things that people jump on. They get very excited. And, the you know, who's the big bad going to be? And there's all these obviously joke memes coming up about who she was referring to. And, of course, it was the Tim Shaw character. Yeah, I liked it. I really liked it. And not so much because if it appeared anywhere else in the season, I would have liked it. But I really liked it as a finale because it did everything.
Were you drunk or?
Well, I did everything that I wanted to do. I've been shouting about in finales for the last God knows how many podcasts we've done, how many years. You know, it actually did a finale where there was a threat to the Earth, but that's like Doctor Who, isn't it? But it wasn't a ramped up event that had to.
End the universe itself will end. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Or the universe, then time, then dimensions and time, then time, dimensions and the universe and Earth. And,
yeah.
You know, reality. It goes round. It was not, there was none of that. The this year's story arc was quite simply Graham and Ryan. And that was the final thing to be dealt with this season. A little bit like Parting of the Ways in that sort of sense, that even though the Daleks were the big thing, a lot of it was really about Eccleston's character finding and Rose finding their position. So I just really liked to be able to sit and watch something without feeling that I was that it was going to try and showcase something really big and then ultimately not manage to do. Because Doctor Who, especially since it's come back, has done that a lot, where it's tried to really push the bar out artificially and thus never quite managing to push it as far as it really as the audience kind of expects it to now. It's been told
it's
going to do
that. To pull it back at the last minute or cheat.
Yes.
And you can do that once or twice, but when you do it every year, you do think, oh, right, okay. Well, you know, what button's going to be pressed this minute? But yeah, so, you're right. It was nice. It was smaller scale.
I mean, I had like you, Gareth, there were times where I was like, I'm not entirely sure what's going on. This crash fleet, you know, I remember her mentioning 5 minutes ago about stuff affecting their minds. And I don't know, it was a bit choppy, but I don't think that's always a bad thing. So,
the momentum
know,
carried it nicely. And I think I had sufficient answers by the end.
Yes.
To be worried.
I mean, the two characters, they were fairly archetyped. They were not fantastically exciting. But I don't think it really mattered because I think this is perhaps what Doctor Who has sort of realised it doesn't have to do. It doesn't, and this sounds crazy, it doesn't have to be, I don't want to say exciting because it should be exciting, but it doesn't have to be sort of consciously pushing that, you know, to try and get to 11 the whole time. And
yeah,
I feel
it's that Flash Gordon thing, isn't it, where every cliffhanger has to be ludicrous and ridiculous and they always have to cheat.
Yes, so it's a massive ramp, isn't it? And as the episodes go on in a series, by the last one, it's massively amped by this point. And the dialogue is in its full, quippy, sharp. And, you know, Stephen Moffat and Davis, they could do some really fantastically sharp, witty dialogue. As we've said before, Gareth, even in the worst episodes, you've always got that sort of moment of good
moment.
Quips.
Yes.
And, you know, you don't feel you need that as much with this. And I like that. I kind of like, I mean, the most quippy thing she says is about the wellies, which is about as northern as you can get. It was, you know, it was a wonderful little motorway.
As you wade through a huge puddle.
But no, anyone, speaking of Flash Gordon, did anyone notice the Flash Gordon reference?
Oh, go on.
When the attack started on Earth, the screen in the background had a sort of similar image to the circular thing around the Earth in the arrows.
Yeah, that was nice. Okay, now you mention it. That was good. That was subtle.
The one thing in there which I think can be excused, but I haven't looked, but I could imagine some people feeling understandably problematic about from an anal protectivist standpoint.
An anal protectiveness, that's trousers, isn't it?
From a trousers standpoint.
Yeah.
Yes.
Would be the fact that she calls the TARDIS with the screwdriver. Because I think that is one of the dangerous things with Doctor Who, which Russell T. Davies always acknowledged, which was the whole driving point to the resolution of Waters of Mars, is that as soon as you can use the TARDIS to actually get out of situations or to sort of resolve situations, you can become in danger of starting to unravel your ability to create tension. Because you know, as soon as you start thinking, why can't you call the TARDIS at any time? As soon as the problem, why can't you do this? And I don't think it stands out in this episode. And I think you can probably, there is a couple of lines that try and justify it, that it's a risk, that it's not sure if it's going to work. I suppose time and space is falling in on itself, I guess. But I suppose that would be something which in any other show you might be concerned about. But in Doctor Who, which constantly reinvents its rules, I don't think it's a problem at all. I think I can see why he did it. You just need the TARDIS there at that point. Let's just get it.
Well, I think I was okay with it because the TARDIS hasn't really been overused in this season.
Not at all. Beautifully not overused.
Yeah.
Been great.
So but, we're good.
What did you think, Patron?
What did you think, Patron?
Yeah, well, like I said, I enjoyed it. I wasn't, you know, there's been episodes this season where I've looked at my watch, felt a bit bored. I felt like I was in as silly as I felt that the opening, well, I didn't really think it was silly. I did feel it was a bit timely, Rani, but that was about it. And I did think that one of the characters looked a bit too much like Brigadier Bambira. But that's neither here nor there. I enjoyed it. It felt more sci-fi than maybe Doctor Who has done over the years. It does that, you know, talking about missing quips. It does miss quips. It does feel like it misses a bit of humour and warmth throughout this series. I think.
No, I think they've got it tonally right.
I'm not sure.
Graham has helped them. I think it's been less sitcom zinger. It's been.
I don't want sitcom
raised zinger. Eyebrow.
I just want it to feel a little lighter. I think. It's a very minor quibble. It's not, you know, it's not stop you watching. Know,
comedy music is back. And got whole sequences that are just there to raise a chuckle.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly not moving them forward. No, I'm thinking more, you know, just feel a bit more genuinely warm in a kind of Davison or Baker era sort of a way. Just feel a bit snuggy.
I like it in the sense I agree with Gareth. I think it has a very nice tone to it. I like there's a simplicity to the formula, which I was always worried they were going to undo with the Arachnids one, where they are just traveling with her, which sort of really harkens back to those sort of, I'm not sure what era, I suppose Troughton, I guess, where the three of them just,
aren't they? Yeah.
They're just there. They don't really have to excuse themselves. They're just there and part of the adventure. And I like that. I'm not sure whether the casting has been totally bang on. I mean, I like all of the characters. I like all the actors, shall I say. I like all their performances. I'm not sure the Ryan Yaz thing really works. I just don't feel that chemistry is particularly there within their characters. And I don't feel anything there between Yaz and Graham particularly. We get very few scenes there as well.
I think you could ditch Yaz and probably not lose anything.
Yeah. That said, I think you're right. I think this episode they really did use all the characters really well. And I've enjoyed, I know I'm the only one, but I've enjoyed having four. I just think that the four haven't found, the dynamic's not totally perfect. And I still think that that may be that Yaz is just not quite right for this outfit. And maybe, yes, either lose her or someone else would be better. I mean, I could see her as a companion of yore, but in this outfit, she feels like a companion of yore who is mildly stunned that she's not the main character and these two other people are sort of dominating in terms of scene weight, because they work really well together, yeah. I think. While she doesn't really work, she works quite well with Whittaker. I think she has quite a good dynamic there. But it's not quite perfect, but at the same time, I like it. It's, and not because it's a callback to the old show, but I think because it's a callback, well, not necessarily a callback, it's a revisitation of that sort of dynamic, that sort of adventurous every week, four people getting along together.
Right. Well, actually, no,
it's
you're
just
right.
Fresh.
It's a callback to that first TARDIS crew in that Ian and Barbara already have their own bond and their own relationship, which can overlap and override the others. Whereas, you know, Yaz is more like, I suppose, Susan in that she ends up by default with the Doctor, but it never feels like a complete relationship either. And Yaz is always the outsider with Graham and Ryan. You know,
I'm struggling
out of a politeness, but we're not as interested.
Yeah. I'm struggling to recall a conversation between Yaz and Graham.
There aren't many, I don't think.
I mean, to me, I feel almost like Yaz should have been. I think the problem is the other two have.
Hello?
Hello, you're back?
James? No, he's gone.
But
he's back.
James, we didn't get any of that.
Okay, well, that's worrying. I was just saying, I'm trying to remember what I was saying now.
You were in a flow, and we were saying about the, you know, that Christian's saying he hadn't seen any, couldn't remember a meaningful conversation between Graham and Yaz.
Yeah, I think I was saying that Ryan and Graham have a certain amount of vulnerability to them, which the dyspraxia comes and goes, but between the two of them, there's a sort of vulnerability in their past, their connections. While Yaz, because she's that more traditional template, doesn't really have any need to really connect with anyone else, because her story is about her finding value, or being her value being recognized in the world, which is a traditional companion story of 2005 onwards. Someone who's not really recognized in their job, is frustrated, doesn't do enough, feels she could do more, goes with the Doctor, finds great wonderful adventures. It's a sort of very self-motivated sort of do you know what I mean? It's a singular pathway which doesn't exist. So she doesn't really, as a pathway, really connect with anyone else, because it's a very sort of selfish Western pathway. Poor me. No one recognises how my worth. Doctor comes, shows me and everyone else how much I'm worth. And it's just not needed there. And I think her character would have been better served if they'd got, I don't want to call it a gimmick character, but someone from a different time zone. Sort of the Captain Jack, not literally Captain Jack. Someone who's a little out of sync with everyone else.
Yeah, they've always shied away from that. Yeah. Well, I suppose, because we now have a gap year confirmed, I'd be very surprised if that gap year isn't acknowledged in some way. And so maybe Yaz will go back and have to do 6 months as a copper again with everything that she's learnt off the Doctor, and will grow and become a different person. Or maybe they'll just open the door and it'll be as if, you know, they'll say, "Ooh, that was a close shave on the planet of the rocking chairs," you know, and then we start again. Maybe it'll be that. But it probably will be the latter, actually.
Possibly. Well, we've still got the New Year's episode, and maybe that will have a resolution which sets up.
Well, isn't it called Resolution?
It is, yeah.
It is indeed, yes. Well, what else would you call a New Year's Day episode?
Hangover. The bit you hadn't really budgeted for and could probably do without, but it's here now, so let's do it.
Oh my God, did I burn down the school with that Chinese lantern?
Yes. Allegedly.
Yeah.
No, I think it's okay. It was a good end to what's been a pretty good season.
Yeah, shall we throw some ratings around?
Yeah.
I'll go first. I'll give it an 8.5. I think. Not quite as good as... I didn't enjoy it quite as much as I enjoyed last week's. So, yeah, 8.5.
I'm amazed how many people didn't like last week's.
I am as well, yeah.
That frog seemed to really upset a lot of people.
Yeah, the frog will bed in, you know. the frog, yeah, that very wise, learned man, Gary Gillett, tweeted the other day. He said, I know my Doctor Who, and I know that once everyone's got over the shock, the frog is going to end up, and the frog verse is going to be one of the most talked about, written about things in this year of Doctor Who forever. And I think he's right.
I think I don't disagree. I think it's one of those episodes which, so you think of the reaction to Ghostlight when it came out, or Happiness Patrol, stories which, or Delta and the Bannermen, and these now have a far more fond memory. Now people can sit back, reassess, and see the quirkiness in a different way. So I think
anxiety is taken out of it. Yeah, so I agree.
I'd give this one, I'm going to give it a 9 because I think it was the right type of episode to end this series with. And I think it'll give people a good, hopefully, a good taste. Because, you know, when you look back at a series, you tend to judge it by your final moments. That final mouthful sort of can define how you remember a season. So I think it's probably been a very astute and good one to end with.
I'm going to surprise myself by giving it a solid 7. Nothing, not that I didn't enjoy it. I think it was great. I very much like Kablam. I thought it was really good, solid, competent, exciting stuff. I don't think there's much in there to revisit. And it certainly is not as exciting as The Mark of Seton. So, for me, a solid 7.
Cool. That's good scores. I would like to sort of expand this out to the series, but I think we need to wait until the New Year's Day episode has aired.
Before I think that's probably fair, because we've got... Yeah, because it is a whole, really. I mean, it's just a weird 3-week gap, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So I think we will do that. I will offer a summary that will maybe act as a kind of forerunner to our future conversation. I do feel the second half of the series has worked a lot better than the first half.
Yeah.
And that's not just feeling comfortable. I have gone back and rewatched the first two episodes. And I am it does feel that there's a kind of a lack of, I don't know if it's focus on part of the production team or
confidence. I think there's a confidence in the second half of the season that is perhaps not there in the first half.
Yeah. I think that's what it is. So
she shifts a little as well. She does. Yeah. She works out that she can step back.
Definitely less is definitely more. As ever, let us know what you think. I haven't thrown this one out to Facebook because I forgot. So hello to all you Facebookers. We'll get this you'll get this podcast very shortly anyway. So which is a sentence I didn't need to say. Let us know what you thought about this. And that is it from us in this sort of a style for the rest of 2018. We will be back with a new podcast for you for Christmas, which is an interview between James and myself and a gentleman called Graham Harper, who you may have heard of.
Oh, yeah.
Go Harper. Hey, what about this minute-by-minute dissection of the Horns of Nymon I was promised? That's in my contract.
Is it? Oh, that's next year.
Yeah.
So that will be along for you as a kind of Christmas present, and a big thanks to Gareth for arranging that as well.
Oh, you know, I was merely the butler that opened the door. You know. it's grand, and I'm off to the BFI next week for the eagerly awaited Missing Believe White. So.
Ooh, any gems you're looking out for there?
Basil Brush and the Kinks looks good. We've got this nice 10-minute Wheel in Space animation.
That sounds fun.
And who knows, Philip Morris is there for Philip Morris Presents, so I think we might get a little bit more information on some of the hell holes he's been to tracking down our priceless cultural artifacts.
Sounds excellent. So watch out the in the press for reports from that event. That's it from the podcast with a K for 2018. Until Christmas, and until next time, it's goodbye from us.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast, available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.